Oh, that's right. Well, it's 4 o'clock, folks. It's not 4 o'clock on the West Coast. It's not 4 o'clock in Arizona, but it is 4 o'clock right here in Greenwood, South Carolina, exactly 4:09 to be exact. And this afternoon, we are very blessed to have quite a lineup for you this afternoon. We're going to be talking to several ranchers later in the show that are down there on the border. We're also talking to a member of FAIR, which is all about immigration and reducing overall immigration to a more normal level. They believe that with proper limits, immigration is positive. But I don't need to tell you that. I need to introduce our guest today. His name is Ira Melman. He is the media director for FAIR. He's been with FAIR since 1986. FAIR has been around for 40 years. And he is a journalist, a professor of journalism, and he has worked, done work with the National Review, the LA Times, the Washington Post. Let us just say this, he's been around. How you doing today, Ira?
I'm doing very well. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. So, you know, we're talking immigration here. We just went through a shutdown and the government opened back up. And then I heard today, because of an ice storm up there, they shut it down again.
Yeah, this time you can't blame it on the president or on Congress. It's just Mother Nature doing this to us. Maybe she's taking some vengeance.
Maybe she is taking some. But you're actually out in Seattle, is that right?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, and I understand you told me earlier today the sun was actually shining out there.
Yes, you don't get that many sunny days in January, but this is one of them.
That's great. So, Ira, you know, the question about whether we need a barrier, border wall, fence, whatever you want to call it, is, of course, a big issue. And I wanted to talk to you first because I wanted to get it from the perspective of FAIR. What can you tell us?
Well, we do need border barriers. Border barriers are in place in a lot of places around the world, and they are extremely effective. You know, the other day the president pointed to Israel as an example, and that's a great example. Up until the time that they put the border wall up there, there were terrorist attacks on a regular basis. And it's, you know, there's also a second wall along the border with Egypt that has cut down on human trafficking. It's practically stopped it. So, you know, the fact is that while these this may be not just medieval technology, as Chuck Schumer calls it, it's actually ancient technology. It's been around for a long time because it's effective. The wheel's been around for a long time. It's still effective. So, you know, the fact that it is old doesn't mean that it has outlived its usefulness. It is extremely effective at preventing people from coming across that border. And it also gives people reason not to make that trip in the first place. The most effective way of controlling our border is convincing people in other countries, don't make that dangerous trip to the border because you're not going to get across.
Absolutely. But then why do you think there is such a, why are they so against having a border, having a wall?
Well, this is really a new development. You know, for the most part, Democrats have supported this up until relatively recently. The authorization for a border wall was passed back in 2006. It passed the Senate with 80 votes at the time. And among those who voted for it back then were Chuck Schumer, who is now the current minority leader of the United States Senate, and then Senators Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden. All of them voted for it back then. You know, it's become anathema to them since that time, but they recognize the effectiveness of a border back then. Chuck Schumer stood up on the floor of the Senate back in 2013 when he was pushing his Gang of Eight bill, and he was talking about the border wall and how effective it will be. So, you know, they're being pulled far out of the mainstream by the far left fringe of the Democratic Party that has gained traction. But, you know, at the same time, Nancy Pelosi needs to be aware of the fact that she's Speaker of the House today, not because Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez won in New York, but because a lot of purple districts flipped in this last election. These are districts where, you know, you have very mainstream political views, and, you know, they flip back and forth. And if she, you know, would like to be Speaker after the next 2 years, and I assume she would, she better be paying attention to what folks in those districts are talking about.
Well, yes, she should be, but she's not. Do you think there is any possibility that this group of 17 politicos can come together with a deal that President Trump will sign?
You know, it's really up to Pelosi and Schumer at this point. They have been saying, at least through the 35 days that the government was partially shut down, that they wouldn't come to the table and talk until the government reopened. Well, you know, the government reopened over this past weekend, and you know now that excuse is off the table. You know, he made it very clear that this has to be part of any package that comes out. Otherwise, you know, we're right back where we started come February 15th, and I don't think anybody wants that. But you know, the Democrats have now gotten what they wanted. They've gotten the government back open, and now it's time for them to negotiate in good faith. And you know, they now have about 18 days left to do it, and we'll see how they do.
Do you think that they actually will, when Nancy Pelosi had said not $1 for this and that he needed to open the government? And two, a lot of people talked about whether President Trump caved. Do you think he caved, or do you think he used good sense? What's your sense of things?
Well, look, I mean, it should never have come to this to begin with. The Republicans had control of Congress for the past 2 years. They didn't get it done. You know, there's no getting around that. You know, the bottom line is that this should have been handled earlier. Look, there was tremendous pressure to get that government reopened. It's 3 weeks. You know, this is not a permanent reopening. That leverage is still there. This is the time for both sides to sit down and negotiate seriously about this. The American people don't want the government shut down. You know, I assume that neither party wants the government shut down. So, you know, what they need to do is put aside their partisan differences and start acting in the best interest of the American people. The American people do support having border security, and they do understand the need for a wall.
Do you think Trump caved?
I don't know if he caved or he didn't cave. You know, he certainly opened the door to further negotiations, and now we'll have to see what happens over the next 2.5 weeks. You know, he made it very clear when he made the announcement last Friday that he has, you know, an ace up his sleeve, which is the declaring a national emergency. So whether he caved or not, it's too early to tell. We'll have to see how it plays out.
You know, I don't know his name right off the bat, but either a senator or a congressman was going to introduce a bill from Louisiana and use the drug money that they confiscate to build the wall. And then his feeling is then Mexico actually will be paying for the wall. What do you think about that possibility? Is that something possible?
Well, that's certainly, you know, I don't think the American public would care, you know, if they were paying for it out of the drug money that was confiscated from these drug cartels. That's perfectly fine. But the bottom line is not having a wall, not controlling illegal immigration is costing the American people an awful lot of money, about $135 billion a year to provide for people who come to this country illegally and their dependents. So, you know, even if the American public had to foot the bill, it would still be a fraction of what it costs to provide the services to people from the country illegally just 1 year. And don't forget, once people are here, this becomes a recurring cost. So whatever money we have to spend is money well spent, because it's going to save us in the long run. And, you know, if they manage to get the money from the drug cartels, all the better.
You know, one of the other things that I think is such an issue that a lot of people don't realize, it is the voting that illegals are able to get done. One of the ranchers calling in this afternoon is actually going to tell us about some of the cases that he knows down on the border. How does, what does Fair have to say about that?
Well, look, I mean, we need to, number one, control our border. Number two, we do need to secure our voting system. In many places around the country, you just, you know, fill out a form, sign the document, and you are on the voter registration rolls, and nobody pays attention to whether you're actually in the country legally or not. There was a report out of Texas that there were some tens of thousands of ineligible voters on the rolls. How many of them were actually voting is another matter. Nobody's quite sure of that. But the bottom line is that, you know, a country that really prides itself on its democracy and its sovereignty ought to have two things, a secure border and a voting system that maintains its integrity, ensures that the people who are eligible to vote have the right to do so, and make sure that people who do not have the right to vote don't do it.
Well, that's exactly right. But it seems like that's part of the Democrats' philosophy is the more people we can get to vote and get more people in here, the less we'll have to worry about, I guess, the conservatives, Republicans, whatever base we want to call.
Well, that's, you know, that has been true. That, look, you know, it's long been said that illegal immigration, with the Democrats see that as cheap votes, the Republicans see it as cheap labor. The American public doesn't want either one of those things. You know, they understand that there is no such thing as cheap labor. It's cheap only to the direct employer. Everybody else then has to pick up the real cost of having the illegal aliens and their families in this country. And, you know, people certainly don't want non-citizens, especially people who are in the country illegally, having a voice in how we run our country. In a close election, these votes could make a vital difference.
Yes, you're right. Now, what about the DACA issue and the TPAs that are here in this country? Where does FAIR stand on those?
Well, you know, the DACA, in our view, was an unconstitutional act on the part of the Obama administration. President Obama did not have the authority to even implement the program. The Republicans, again, lost their nerve and didn't challenge it. It's only belatedly that some states have brought a challenge. And, you know, the Supreme Court is not going to hear that case at least until the fall. So, you know, this is something that needs to be resolved once and for all. You know, as I said, it was an unconstitutional program in our view. And the temporary protected status, TPS, it was a well-intended program to protect people who were in this country legally at a time when some unforeseen circumstance made it difficult for them to return home, whether it was a natural disaster or some kind of political upheaval. But, you know, in some cases, you have people who have been on temporary protected status here in the United States for more than 20 years. Enough is enough. It is time for people to recognize that it's time to go home, that when we say temporary, we mean temporary. And again, you've got these activist judges who are holding things up. You know, there's certainly nothing in the law that says we cannot terminate TPS. As a matter of fact, the law says it very explicitly, that it can be terminated at any time. And yet it is being tied up in the courts. And so you have a program that was meant to be temporary, and now the judges are telling us we can't make it temporary.
But what about DACA? Should they be able to stay and stay here throughout their lives?
No. As I said, this was an unconstitutional act on the part of President Obama. You know, Congress has the authority to pass an amnesty for them. We would be opposed to it, but at least they would be acting constitutionally. It would be bad policy, but it would be constitutional. But again, that's not how you go about dealing with illegal immigration, by periodically having amnesties for people who broke the law. All that does is send a signal to people, come to the United States illegally. If you stick it out long enough, they're going to basically throw up their hands and give you amnesty. Our immigration laws exist for a reason. It's not because we want to be mean and keep people out. It's because we understand that while it's always in the interest of immigrants to immigrate, nobody comes here legally or illegally unless it's in their interest to be here. It does have a very profound impact on people in this country. It affects people's jobs, their livelihoods, their children's education, everything that's important to them. And that's why we have these laws, and that's why they need to be enforced.
Yeah, we don't seem to be doing a very good job of enforcing them, though, Ira. That's the problem. And I think the other thing that is really bothersome, particularly to me, is to see the spin on the media on so many of these things. I mean, I was talking to somebody yesterday, and they were telling me that even one of the medias, I think it was CNN, is helping finance some of these caravans coming up here.
I don't believe CNN is financing this.
How about
I don't know where they're getting their information from. But the bottom line is that the media tend to report things as human interest stories. And if you take it down to that micro level, the individual illegal immigrant who's coming to the United States, sure, we can all understand why he or she is coming to the United States. That's not the issue. The issue is what impact does it have on our country? And that they don't seem to want to look at.
I agree with you, Ira, but that's how you do things, isn't it? You make it so messy so that nobody can figure out what the real issue is, and we get mired down in the mud.
Right. I mean, the issue is immigration policy, which is a public policy. It's not about individual immigrants. They are certainly an interested party. They certainly are, perhaps even a stakeholder. But the policy exists to serve the public interest. That's what public policies are for. That has been the failing here of our country, and also in the way the media report this. They don't report this as a public policy issue. They try to report on it as a human interest story.
What do you think about the fact? I mean, let's see. FAIR's been around for what? This is your 40th year, correct?
Yes.
So that means that you've been around because of looking at the inequities of immigration, or how our policies haven't been upheld. Do you think President Donald Trump has the ability to change this?
He can do things through executive action, and he has been doing that. But really, it's going to take Congress to make changes in our immigration laws. Our laws under our Constitution are made by Congress. They have not just the authority, but the responsibility to do that in a way that serves the American people. And they have not done that. They pass laws and then ignore them. We were promised back in 1986 after the amnesty then that they were going to get serious about enforcing our laws. They haven't done it. They have made countless promises to the American people. They haven't kept them. The illegal aliens, when they make promises to them, those are fulfilled. You know, the people who were promised amnesty back in 1986 got their amnesty. We don't owe people who broke our laws anything. Our government owes the American people, whom those laws were meant to protect, something, and they're not delivering on it.
So I guess if we'd ever get the immigration laws right, FAIR would be out of business.
Well, I suppose so, but that wouldn't be so bad. We'd find other things to do.
That's right. So if people want to learn more about FAIR, how would they find out about it, Ira?
Best way is to go to the website, which is fairus.org. That's FAIRUS.org, fairus.org.
That's great. Is there anything else you'd like to say in closing before I let you go?
No, we just need to make sure that our elected officials understand that, the American people want action there. And for people in your neck of the woods, Lindsey Graham is now the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. He's going to have a lot of influence. He's kind of waffled on this issue for a long time. Perhaps hearing from his constituents might help him shape his views a little more carefully.
That's a good idea. Ira Milcom, thank you so much for calling us this afternoon. I hope you have a great one out there in Seattle. Get out there and soak up some sun.
Thanks very much.
All right. Thank you for calling us this afternoon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, there you go. We just heard from Ira Milcom. He is with FAIR, and he was the media director. Many of you know I've been to FAIR several times and been on their radio row talking to a lot of the people, and this is how I got to know FAIR, and this is how we got to know some of the ranchers that are going to be calling in and we're going to talk to. I think you're going to hear a little bit different view than what IRA has. Of course, they're for immigration, but they have a view because they live it and they see it and they know what's going on. In just a few minutes, we're going to have Fred Davis is going to be calling us. He is down there and he is going to be driving. He's got a load of cattle taking them to market. So he told me he'd call me and we could talk about what he knows. Some of the interesting factors, things like education, how they're educating the kids across the border and how they just come through every day and go to school. Well, there's an expense for us, folks, and so much more. So you keep it right here on WCRS. When we come back, hopefully we'll have Fred Davis on the phone with us. Don't you go away. The antique vintager has arrived in Greenwood. He's been in Greenwood, but he's been incognito. Now unveiled for the very first time, the antique vintager, the one and only Jeff Eller, is debuting on the national stage with his podcast. Shouldn't you be one of the first to come in and see him and see what you have with What's It Worth? Can you sell it? Do you want to sell it? And should you sell it? Only the antique vintager can tell you such things. So come and see us at 637 Durst Avenue East. Call first for your appointment. 864-229-6613. The antique vintager, Jeff Eller, is in the building. Oh, that's right. I am here and I've got one of our ranchers with us. I wanted to talk some about immigration and how they see it down there on the border. I met Fred and his lovely wife, Peggy, right there at Fair up there in Washington, D.C. And, you know, he truly is a cowboy. He wears a big hat. And we've had a lot of good conversations, and I thought we'd just see what he had to say. Right now, he's hauling a load of cattle to market. So, do I have Fred here?
You do.
You do? Okay, Fred, how's the weather down there?
Oh, it's pretty nice today. It's a little bit overcast, but it's about 65 degrees. I worked up a pretty good sweat getting things downloaded.
Oh, okay. Well, the weather's not that good here, Fred. And I understand they had to close down the government today because they were having an ice storm. What do you think?
Dad, I'm in Arizona.
I know. Can you believe it? Anyways, where exactly is your ranch?
My house is 25 miles north of the border, and I go down to about 15 miles from the border.
And your ranch has been in your family for years, if I remember correctly.
Absolutely. 125
years. That's a long time. You've seen a lot of changes on the border, haven't you, Fred?
Absolutely.
What can you tell us?
Well, when I was a kid, there were a few illegals came, 5 or 6 a year. My mother fed everybody that came to the door, and I did the same thing. We never had over 10 or 12 in a year. They were agricultural people, wanted to better their life a little and go back to Mexico. And in the late 80s and 90s, we had veritable hordes. You can't feed 60 when they come to your door. The numbers were atrocious. I caught 107 within a mile and a half of my house in 24 hours.
Oh, my God. And they...
I'm not 25 miles north of the border.
Wow. So how is it today, Fred, down there?
Well, it's better. They built a fence south of us, and it helped quite a bit. That was also when the cartels started smuggling people as well as the drugs. And the mom and pop people smugglers are out of business, and that slowed them way down on my ranch. It's better, but the Border Patrol is still not down on the border. There's more of them 30 miles north than there is right on the international boundary.
Why is the Border Patrol not on the border?
Well, it all goes back to a defense and depth strategy that David Aguilar cooked up when he was our sector chief, and then he became deputy chief of the Border Patrol. And it protects the cities and force them into the rural areas, and then instead of having seconds or minutes to catch them within a city, they have hours or days to catch them out in the country. So that leaves all of us that live in the country as America's first line of defense.
Right. And now, though, they have put a fence. In fact, I remember seeing you on Fox News several times at the border. I don't remember who you were with, but you were down there, and you and I were talking yesterday, and you said you weren't there when Judge Jeanine Pirro was down there, but Peggy was.
Right. Right, yeah, she came to the border. We've done border fairs with a lot of people. We've been on 12 international TV stations. We're just trying to wake up America to what is really happening at the border. I can't believe that Nancy Pelosi will not believe Homeland Security facts and figures, yet 4.5 years ago, John Laden, I invited her to come to the border and see what it's really like. And she makes all these decisions and shuts down the government over something that she's never seen.
Right, and haven't two, I think I saw yesterday where two Border Patrol's wives invited her to come down and they haven't heard anything back from her.
Imagine that.
Yeah, imagine. Well, you know, not only illegals coming over, but of course all the drugs that are coming across, that's a big problem. And how about just, you and I were talking yesterday about the voting, the illegal voting going on. I touched on it with Ira that was on here just a little while ago with Fair. What can you tell us about what's happening with the illegal voting?
Well, it's my understanding that you don't have to show an ID to vote in a federal election. Now, that was brought up in our senatorial election, and theoretically, that's how Kristen Sinema got so many votes. The county recorder in Phoenix opened up two emergency polling places that are in notoriously known illegal alien district.
And so...
That's how she got all her votes.
Well, that was a long, hard-fought battle out there. You guys didn't even have a senator out there, did you? For a while.
No. Well, John Kyle took over for McCain.
Right.
He finished about the year, and then, thank goodness, the governor appointed Martha McSally, but she got beat in the election, and then he appointed her when John Kyle stepped down.
So in this illegal voting, that's one part of it. Another part is, I believe you were telling me that there's a lady out there that everybody knows. You were talking to one of them about how he got to vote and everything?
Well, there's a lady in Douglas, Arizona. It's been known that she controlled somewhere between 400 and 600 votes. All the illegals vote by absentee ballot. They just recently made you come into the recorder's office to get your voter registration. For years, you just filled it out and mailed it in and just said, yes, I'm a citizen. Well, they finally stopped that I believe. But so they would go over to that lady's house and she'd tell them how to vote. And she'd go to the rest homes and hold the old people's hand up over the ballot while she marked them down.
Well, Fred,
there's a lot of talk.
Why isn't anything being done about this, though, Fred?
Well, I don't know. The only thing I've held against our previous governor, when she was running for Secretary of State, she vowed to clean up the elections in Douglas. And she never did lift a finger.
Now, another thing
that's a small town, Douglas, about 14,000 people, and the single largest contributor to the Democratic Party in Arizona lives there and runs that town.
Wow. Well, this is the type of stuff that you don't hear much about, though, in the news, do you, Fred?
No. No.
I think it's kind
of... And you never will.
Wow. Well, another aspect of this, and I remember talking to Peggy about this, is educating the illegals that they come across the border, they walk through, come to school, go to school all day, and then go back to the other side. Why does this happen?
Because it's illegal for the school to offer your citizenship.
I'm sorry, I think we missed that. What did you say?
I say it is illegal for a school administrator to ask a kid's citizenship. You cannot ask. So my tax dollars are educating illegals. They say somewhere between 80% and 90% of the kids in the Douglas public schools are from Agua Prieta, Mexico.
You know, that's just really, really hard to believe, and yet... What kind of education are the children that are on the United States side of the border getting when they're being educated with children that don't have the background? Are there special classes, or are they all together as one?
Well, you never know. A lot of them even teach classes in Spanish because so many of them don't speak English. So the United States citizens are getting an inferior education because all the time is spent on English as a second language kids.
Well, I just think this is just a travesty. And what kind of taxes do y'all have down there, you know, for your property taxes, etc.?
Well, just like everybody else, the county assessor and the supervisor set your taxes, and there's a portion that goes to schools and fire.
And
I can't quote the figures right offhand.
No, but do they consider that the taxes are low or taxes are high? I mean, what is the prevailing feeling of taxes? Everybody thinks every tax is too high, but some areas actually have relatively low taxes.
Well, our property taxes are not bad in Cochise County. We have a neighboring county that's incredibly high.
Okay.
But they have a lot of people coming out of Tucson to live there, so they're making them pay dearly.
Sure. Well, you know, I think, you know, I just, some of the messages coming up on my Facebook page, Fred, people are saying, we're listening here in Greenwood, and we sure are glad to get this information. One last thing I wanted to ask you about is, how are the cartels, you told me a story, which I just found it very hard to believe, that made you think about the Hitler and the Jews and everything. What were you telling me about that? How the cartels...
I'm not recalling that.
How the cartels were...
You know, the Germans almost got Mexico to fight us in World War II.
Right.
There was a huge effort, and there were a lot of Germans in Mexico City. trying to get them to enter into World War II against us.
I think you were talking about the people coming across in the caravans and how the cartels were taking care of the excess people that were in our country or on the border there.
Well, there's, you know, in the President Trump interviewed a guy in Texas, and he said it was like the 12th of January, and he said we've already caught, in his little area, they'd caught 457 people, and 144 of them were from foreign countries. Afghanistan, Iraq, China. I mean, it just goes on, and that's what the American people don't understand is the OTMs, as the Border Patrol call them, other than Mexicans. And there's a ton of those people all the time, and it's national security. I think an awful lot of people in America think it's a bunch of gardeners and maids that are coming over here. Right. Those people are already here. The people that are coming are trying to do us harm.
Yeah.
Almost every one of them.
Well, it certainly is a scary situation. The drugs that are coming across, the people that are coming across, and just dealing with the quantities of people that are coming through with a drain on the resources. So it's a huge problem. And even though it has slowed down, they're still coming, right?
Yep.
Yeah, yep. They are. Well, Fred, go ahead.
They've got the wall here, so they're pushing them. Now they're coming through in hordes in the Boot Hill in New Mexico, just east of them. Those people are having terrible issues.
Well,
so we've got a fence right here, and it's just like the little Dutch boy and his finger in the dike. They're gonna go where they're in the fence.
Yeah, I think that's the point that everybody's missing, is that they'll go right around it. Well, Fred, is there anything else you'd like to say? I've got John on the phone with us. We're going to have him on with us in just a second. John Ladd, your neighbor by a distance, but he's going to be talking to us. What would you like to say to finish this up?
Well, our sheriff's department has a saber team, and they spent... that includes a couple of Department of Public Safety officers from the governor. And those seven guys with $300,000 worth of game cameras have done more to steal the border than the Border Patrol has in 40 years.
Hmm. Well,
it's incredible.
It is incredible. Well, thanks so much for
calling.
Thanks so much for calling in this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
All right, say hello to your lovely wife. Bye-bye. Bye. All right, that was Fred Davis. Andy, how about let's just make sure we got John and everything in good shape. Let's take a real short commercial break, and we'll be right back. I got another rancher. Don't you go away.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood today.
Oh, that's right. We're having a good time. Now we've got another rancher from Arizona here with us. We've got John Ladd, and he is down near the border. How you doing today, John?
I'm fine, thanks. It's a pleasure to be with you again.
It's great to be with you. You know, you are, we talked, and things have changed a little bit down on the border for you, correct?
Yes, ma'am. We've had an improvement.
And where exactly are you, and what has made for that improvement?
Well, our south fence is the border, and we're in Cochise County, which is about 100 miles southeast of Tucson.
Okay.
And we have a little border town. It's called Naco, Naco, Arizona, and Naco, Sonora. We have a port of entry there. But my family's been here 123 years, so we've seen pretty much everything on it.
Well, you know, did you always have a fence at the border, or did you not have a fence at the border? Your fence, I mean, your fence for your property. You said you were on the
right
border.
Well, up until 2006, it was a 7-strand barbed wire fence separating the two countries. and that fence was for livestock.
Right.
Didn't want Mexican cattle intermingling in America because of the disease issues.
Right.
And then in 2006, we started getting the steel mesh and landing mat fence. And that didn't do, it helped, but it wasn't very secure. And then in, a year ago in June, a lot of that was replaced with the 18-foot Ballard fence.
What's a Ballard fence?
It's 6-inch square tubing full of concrete, 4 inches apart.
4 inches apart.
So the Border Patrol can see through it. They can see what's on the south side. But it's 18 feet tall, so it's a little bit harder to get over it. And nobody we have about 10 and a half miles of the border, and nobody has been able to tunnel under it or cut it.
Have they gone over it?
They've gone over it, but not near like it with the mesh fence. Mm-hmm. That was 10 feet and 13 feet tall. So they had a ladder on one side and a rope on the other, and they drop into the U.S. Well, they're doing the same thing on the 18-foot Ballard fence, but it's a little harder when you're 18 feet in the air.
I guess.
And it gives the Border Patrol more time to know that they're coming in to get there.
Now, where is the Border Patrol in relationship to this fence? Are they on your property, or where are they exactly?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the Border Patrol, Brian Terry Station, that was named after an agent that got killed here a couple of years ago.
Right.
But it's about 2.5 miles from the border. It's one of the closer Border Patrol stations to the actual border. And I allow Border Patrol to patrol our ranch also. And one of the talking points we've had for 30 years is we need more Border Patrol on the actual border. The international boundary. And there's always an excuse and manpower issues and this and that, but we have a road, a 60-foot easement, that they have free access to that all the way along our border down here.
And so they do patrol?
Yes, yep, they do. And then when they get across the wall and they don't catch them actually at the border, then they chase them into our ranch, and give them credit, maybe 50% apprehensions of what comes across the wall. But they're not catching everybody.
Now, what type of people are coming across the border where you live? You are listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood. What type of people are coming across the border, John?
We don't have family units. We don't have kids, unaccompanied juveniles. We got scouts for the cartel, people that are laying out the routes for the drugs to come through, and they're monitoring law enforcement, including Border Patrol. And they wear full camouflage and have cell phones and walkie-talkies that they communicate back into the headquarters in Mexico.
Now, just out of curiosity, do you have any of the do you have any electronic devices or things that are watching over what's going on or not?
We do. We have 4 permanent cameras on the ranch. We have two portable cameras on the ranch, and we've got a portable radar unit on the ranch.
How's that work?
The best technology they got is the portable radar unit.
Okay. What does
that
do?
The cameras, it's a regular radar. Has a dish that scans the area and picks up anything that moves. And when they pick up a target, it'll give GPS coordinates and a distance from the radar. And so that enables the Border Patrol to know exactly where the group is.
Now, have you seen
that? Is the best technology they've got.
And I don't suppose they're using drones or anything with machine guns on them, are they? I'm just teasing.
Well, we
go ahead. I'm sorry.
We do. We have some predators. Homeland Security, Fort Huachuca is pretty close to us, an Army base.
Right.
And we do have some of the predator drones, but we have a lot of restricted airspace down here because of the fort. And so they don't patrol as much as we'd like them to.
Right. How much?
And that's probably the most expensive technology they got because of the buying satellite time. That's how they operate. They're unmanned.
They have to buy satellite time. So,
yep.
I believe you told me that you don't see many families or anything. You do see more individuals. Do you think these are truly people that are of south of the border people, or do we have other types of people coming in through the border there?
Well, 90% of what they've caught here the last year and a half, 2 years, is from Central America.
Okay.
Very few Mexicans. The Mexican cartel is controlling all of that also, but it's Guatemalan and San Salvadorians is predominantly what we're getting.
Now, one of the things go ahead.
We had a couple of people from Peru before Christmas that they caught.
Now, one of the things you were telling me, though, is you have a judicial system down there and a sheriff and whatnot that's made things a whole lot different on the border. Is that correct?
Yes, that's true.
You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, that's been the only relief that we've had this has been going on for 40 years, illegal immigration, but 30 years has been terrible. And our sheriff, Mark Daniels, he partnered up with our governor, Doug Ducey of Arizona, and they formed a SABR team. And the state funded some money, and the county funded some money, and we have 7 men that are deploying real-time game cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And that picks up the activity coming in, and those 7 officers come in and apprehend, and predominantly they were focusing on drugs. Cool. And we haven't, I told you earlier, we'd had 54 drive-throughs of trucks and backpackers, 50-pound bundles on their back, out of control. But we haven't had drugs on our ranch since last February because of that SABR team.
This is not the Border Patrol. This is your local
sheriff.
No,
ma'am. It's highway patrol officers and deputies. Those 7 men, that's what make up that group.
And then aren't they prosecuting these cases too?
Yeah, that's number one, you got 7 men that want to do what they're doing and completely dedicated to it. But the big thing was our county attorney said, whatever you catch, we're going to prosecute. And they did. It's 100% prosecution rate, and it's 2-year prison time.
And then in
a year, they've caught 39 drug smugglers, and they're in jail.
That's huge. I mean, that is an example right there, isn't it, to how to deter crime and how to deter people coming across the border, isn't it?
Isn't that amazing? I mean, you're going to go to jail for 2 years? Maybe I better not come here.
What effect has it had on the cartel? I mean, have they come back against people? Has there been any killings because of the cartel? Or are they just saying, oh, we'll find another point of entry?
Well, there hadn't been any. I know there's been some threats, but nothing has happened violently. But what it's done to them is that these 39 people they caught were the main experience of how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So they go out and recruit some new guys that have no clue what they're doing, and they got caught right off the bat. So now they're just going around us. They don't come in that one. The corridor that they shut down is about 15 miles wide, and it goes all the way up to I-10, our freeway in Arizona.
Right.
And they shut that corridor completely down. So they're going west of us over into Nogales area, and they're going east of us into New Mexico.
So when the Democrats, Nancy Pelosi and everything, say we don't need a fence, we should be using all this technology and all this stuff to catch them and the point of entry, and it just keeps changing. So what's the sense in building a wall or fence or barrier? What do you have to say to Nancy Pelosi?
Well, I bet probably couldn't say it on the radio, but she's absolutely delusional with that statement. The amount of drugs that are still coming in the U.S. is, you know, unfathomable. About, you know, it's opiates, it's fentanyl and cocaine and meth and heroin. And she is out of touch making that kind of a statement.
And, you know, John, I just have a question. You know, you've been on your ranch for 123 years. Was there ever a time where you said maybe we ought to give this up?
No.
Why was that? I mean, do your boys work on the ranch with you? Am I correct on that?
Yes. Yep. Two of our three boys are involved, and you know, they're not quite as outspoken as I am, but they're committed. And you know, this is our legacy, and that, you know, we don't want to do anything else. And this is our home. We're not leaving.
Well, it's been pretty tough, though, being on that border, isn't it? And trying to protect it for many years without a lot of help. It's great that you now have a sheriff and a team that is picking them up. That's terrific.
That was such a breath of fresh air that, you know, and the irony of the story is the NACO Border Patrol Station has between 300 and 400 agents at it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we've been putting up with the same deal. They chase them, get away, and keep on having dope, keep on having illegals. And we come in with 7 men, and it shuts it down in a year.
Well, and then what do you
have? I don't know if that's irony or what it is, but it really, you know, you can shut the border down if you have the will to do it.
So is it the Border Patrol's problem that they don't have the will? Is it the federal government, the bosses, shall we say, that are causing them not to do their job? I'm sure you have spoken with Border Patrol people. What is the problem?
It's Washington. The Border Patrol are puppets for Washington. And Border Patrol could shut down the border, too. They're completely capable of doing that. But Washington will not allow it. And you go back to Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, with that attitude, it is never going to get done through the Border Patrol. There's too much power and money on smuggling on the border.
Well, that certainly is a shame to hear, because that means the taxpayers are paying all this dollars, and yet we're not getting what we paid for.
That's true.
Border Patrol taking care of the border. And yet President Trump wants to put, didn't he want to put something like 15,000 more people on the border?
Right. And that, you know, that's legitimate. That's needed. The solution, technology is a tool that they have, but boots on the ground is the absolute solution. Technology can't pick up everything, but a man on the border could pick up more than technology does. And the government has hamstrung the Border Patrol in their hiring procedures and their budget. So the universal thing with Border Patrol is they've always been shorthanded. They've never had enough agents.
And that's
directly reflected on Washington.
Right. But then again, if you don't turn them loose, it doesn't matter how many you have, does it?
Well, that's right. And, you know, since President Trump's been in office, some of these loopholes with our immigration laws are absolutely idiotic. You know, the political asylum and everything, you set foot in America, you're here. And I didn't realize that until all of this shut down and everything else. I'm finding out some of these really bad immigration laws that we have.
Well, I am so glad for you, as far as on your property, that they've been able to shut it down. And they should be talking about your county with your sheriff and this whole thing on the news. And I don't hear much about it anywhere, John.
Why not? That's deliberate. The press and media doesn't want to put that out. And you know, the other thing, our sheriff is on the Homeland Security Committee now. Our representative, who now is our senator, Martha McSally, was pretty much instrumental in getting our sheriff on that Homeland Security Committee to give him advice on how to shut the border down. So we do have a voice in Washington, but the mainstream media sure doesn't want to talk about a solution to shutting the border down.
You are absolutely right. And I am so glad that I picked up the phone and was able to get you on this afternoon to talk about this. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us before I let you go?
Well, these people coming aren't coming to work. They are coming to conduct their illegal business on drugs and human smuggling. And the human smuggling, you know, the politicians want to talk about the humanitarian immigration issue. If you knew what these people were doing to the people they're bringing in this country, it's raping them and torturing them. Once they get here, they're indentured servants the rest of their life. And if they leave, they kill them or their families in Mexico still. And people need to understand, this isn't about humanitarianism, it's about saving our country. And the border needs to be secured. If you want to come to America to immigrate, come through the port of entry.
Absolutely. Well, John, I am so glad you were able to take a little time to talk to us. Thanks so much for updating us with what's going on at the border.
Well, thank you for what you're doing. You're doing wonderful. Keep it up.
All right. Thank you so much, John. Say hello to your lovely wife. I did get to speak to her for a minute. I called her instead of you, and I got to talk to her. So,
good deal. She's retired, so she's home now to answer the phone.
Yeah, are you going to retire anytime soon, John?
No, don't want to and can't afford to. So.
I understand you there. All right, John, thanks for calling us. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, bye-bye. Let's hear a quick word, and I've got one more rancher. I got to call him and see if I can get him on the phone with us. Don't you go away. I'm Ann Eller, and I love the advertising success of radio so much, I bought the station, WCRS. Radio is the most responsive medium ever when it comes to selling services and products. Want to run a sale? Have a great idea? Need to promote? Need to do it fast? Radio can get your message out there fast. Newspaper, TV, just can't react as fast as radio. No need for a production team, graphics, etc. With our speed, your message is out there fast. Affordable? Absolutely yes. Qualified buyers listening? Absolutely yes. Let me show you how you can turbocharge your business. After all, you're listening, and I'm Ann Eller. I bought WCRS, the voice of Greenwood for 76 years. Call me today, 864-229-7984. Just do it. Oh, that's right. We've had a great conversation, and right now I have Ed Ashurst on the phone with us. He also is an Arizona rancher and one of the ranchers that I met up there in Washington, D.C. with Fair. He's actually written a book, Alligators in the Moat, subtitled Politics and the Mexican Border. And I tell you what, Ed, what are you doing right now? Sent a bunch of cattle out today, didn't you?
Yeah, we shipped five semi-loads of steers to a feedlot earlier today. So, been working all day.
Been working all day. You know, for me, this quasi-city girl here, I have no idea what you're talking about, but I know when the beef comes out, you know, I certainly like to have a good steak.
Well, we appreciate the customers.
Okay. And I know
there's no sense in growing beef if you don't have somebody to eat it.
Well, that's true. Now, where exactly in Arizona is your ranch?
In the far southeast corner, 30 miles east of Douglas and Agua Prieta, Sonora.
Now, your property is located where in relationship to the border?
My house is exactly 20 miles north. The south end of my ranch is probably 15 miles north of the international boundary.
And is there a fence, or what divides what divides Mexico from the United States?
South of me, it's two or three different things. In places, it's a barbed wire fence. In places, it's kind of a Normandy barrier, a big railroad iron supported by a couple other railroad irons, and you can walk right under it or hurdle over it at a high rate of speed if you want. And then in other places, it's I think they call it a bollard fence. It's steel, 6 or 8 feet high. So it's multiple things depending on where you are.
6 or 8 feet high, that's not very tall.
Right. Now, from Douglas west, the fence gets a lot higher for probably 100 miles, and then west of Nogales, it's just a very sorry, sagging barbed wire fence again for many, many miles. So it depends on where you are.
Okay. And how is the border where you're at? Do you have people coming across, or is it slowed down?
My situation is better than it used to be, but my neighbors are worse, especially Hidalgo County, New Mexico, Luna County, New Mexico. The Boot Heel of New Mexico is really getting hit right now, and the Big Bend area of Texas. And then Santa Cruz and Yuma County, Arizona, mainly from Nogales west to the Indian Reservation, is a very bad place. Lots of guns in that area for some reason. Lots of Mexican narcos across the border packing AK-47s. But my personal deal is better than it used to be.
And that is why?
I really can't tell you. I think a lot of it is that we have a really good sheriff in Cochise County, and he has a good border interdiction team, and we have a good county attorney, and they're very proactive in prosecuting all the outlaws that come across that they catch. The sheriff's office is actually more successful at apprehending the bad guys than the Border Patrol is.
Do you live near where John does? Are you in the same county? Because he was telling us.
We're in the same county. He's about 30 miles west of me.
Yeah, and he was telling us the program that they had there and what success you've had. So what do you learn out of that?
Well, I might have mentioned to you yesterday, the biggest thing that has happened on the border recently is a rancher friend of mine in Texas who I've done a lot of business with. I've been to his ranch. He has suffered the same problems as me. He has had, through his congressman, a Mr. Hurd, H-U-R-D, got him connected with a company in Southern California that has developed radar technology and cameras. And with his own money, this rancher and this company helped him they virtually shut his ranch down. They caught over 2 tons of dope in 3 weeks, and he was getting flooded by illegal aliens and crime on a daily basis, and they virtually shut his place. They closed off his place. There is no illegal activity on his place now for 6 months, and they did it with zero tax dollars. It was all private money. And I know of no place on the border where the federal agencies have been able to accomplish that. So what I'm saying is this, the border, everybody thinks the border couldn't be sealed and secured, and that's a bunch of baloney. We could secure the border. We just don't have the wherewithal to do that. And if people would buy and read my book, they would have a lot greater understanding of what I'm talking about. So.
And then the place that you're talking about is just rather an interesting aside. This is where they filmed the movie Giant. Am I right on that?
That is correct. Yes. Yeah. And my rancher friend, he's 68, 69 years old. He was a little kid, and he actually is in that movie. He's a little boy on a Shetland pony in the movie, but he's there. But it was filmed on his family's ranch. That's correct.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty neat. Now, he actually, if I'm remembering the story you told me, he actually told the Border Patrol, get off my property. Is that right?
That's correct, because they were damaging a lot of things. They would not reimburse him. And as he told me, paraphrase quote, he said, I finally realized that I was part of the problem. And he said, the problem is I was trying to get the Border Patrol to do their job, and they would not do it, so I kicked their ASS off the ranch. I got a private company to come in there with some high-tech security, and with my own money, I have sealed the property off, and I have no illegal activity. So, I mean, those are his words, not mine.
Yeah, well, that's a pretty huge statement to make, and, you know, it kind of makes you wonder how much it would actually cost with the system that he's dealing with there.
Let me tell you this. I know enough about this. If I was president, me and that rancher, together, we could secure the border with 10% of the money that Trump is trying to appropriate from Congress. And that's a fact.
Well, then how come
the first thing you would have to do, you need to get rid of the Border Patrol. The Border Patrol is overrun with overpaid fat hierarchy that sit behind the desk and do nothing. You need to turn the border security over to the Coast Guard, and you need to get the Border Patrol Union out of national security issues. National security, the border is dependent on a labor union. There's very few people know that, and Trump needs to, rather than build a wall, he needs to do away with the Border Patrol labor union, and he needs to get the Coast Guard on the border.
Well, why is nobody talking about this, Ed? This is what I find amazing.
People are.
Okay.
Us ranchers here on the border have been talking about this for years, and we have told congressmen about it.
And?
But it does. They don't want, you know, they don't want anybody to know that what we're saying. And the Border Patrol sure as heck doesn't want anybody to know what we're saying.
Are you putting yourself in jeopardy, Ed, by telling us this on the radio?
Well, I have been. They have tried to set me up. They got a couple lawyers and tried to put me in prison, and I have been threatened. That is a documented fact. Come to Arizona, and I'll get people to back me up. But you know what? I know where I'm going when I die, so I don't care.
Well, this is pretty amazing stuff. Now, the reason you wrote your book, Why did you write that book? The name of the book is Alligators in the Moat, subtitled Politics and the Mexican Border. Why did you write that book?
I had been on TV and in every major newspaper in the world quoted about statements I'd made on the border. I've been on Fox News, over and over again. And I had written some articles that were published in magazines and newspapers. And I felt like it was something, I felt like it was my duty to do it. And I needed to do it to get it off my chest. And so it was just something that I had to do. And if it sold 10 copies, fine. If it sold 50 million, fine. I did it to satisfy myself. And it's a darn good book. If people would read it, they would understand what's going on down here a whole lot better than they do, because I don't pull any punches. I tell it like it is. But it's very factual. It's very well researched. And I can back up everything I say.
You know, the other thing that a lot of people probably don't know about you is that you had a neighbor and a friend that was murdered by an illegal alien, and you helped track the murderer into Mexico.
That is correct, and the guy that murdered him burglarized my son's house just hours before he killed Rob Prince. The sheriff's office did a crime report on it, and the stuff that he stole from out of my son's house was found at the crime scene with the empty cartridges that he killed Rob with. And the next morning, me and a famous lion hunter tracker named Warner Glenn tracked the outlaw all the way to the international boundary, 15 miles. And that's documented history.
You know, and I think that's where a lot of us, we have no idea how it is to live there.
That's true, and that's one of the, being a border resident, that's the most frustrating thing, is we have found that when you get 20, 30 miles north of the border, people really don't understand what it's like, and they get sick of listening to us, and we're telling everybody, wake up, this is what's happening to our country, but people won't listen. But it's very frustrating.
Absolutely.
But, you know.
Now, did you vote for President Trump?
Absolutely, and I would vote for Trump tomorrow if he ran again. I think he's talking to the wrong people. I think he needs to change some things. But, no, I'm a Trump supporter, absolutely.
Okay. I just wanted to, so people would know where you stood on this issue. Do you think there's any hope with the 17 congressional people coming together and doing anything that will make a difference, Ed?
There is so much leftist, socialist, open border money flowing into Washington, D.C. There is such an influence of anti-nationalism, anti-Constitution, rewrite the Constitution, New World Order type of thing in D.C. These people are not, there is nothing in the Constitution about letting people across illegal. There's a great deal about stopping it. There is nothing in the Constitution that an American citizen is supposed to fund and facilitate a caravan coming from Central America. There's everything in the Constitution against it. Our Constitution and our heritage is being twisted by some very people who do not see the world as I do. So is there a, you would think patriotism would be the same whether you were a Republican or a Democrat, but it doesn't seem to be that way anymore. So I don't know. It's discouraging.
Absolutely it is. And so in truth, you think that President Trump getting $5.7 billion for a wall is not really the issue?
In my opinion, you don't need a wall. I support Trump, but he needs to come and talk to us cowboys on the border. If you had border security, boots on the ground at the border, you wouldn't need a wall. And if you have a wall and you do not have boots on the ground, the wall isn't going to work. And that has already been proven. It's been proven on John Ladd's ranch. He has the best wall of anywhere on the Mexican border, and Mexican outlaws come over that wall every single day, and there's a big Border Patrol station right there. But the Border Patrol agents don't go to the wall. They go north.
Right.
The Border Patrol is not on the border.
So that's why you need the group that y'all have down there with your sheriff and seven members out there, picking up the people and then prosecuting them, and it would make a difference. Plus, what you're saying about the technology being used to get these people off the border.
Our county sheriff does 100 times more good with every dollar he gets than the federal government does. He is outgunned, outmanned, outfunded, underfunded. He has a very small force, and yet he gets more done with very little than the hundreds and hundreds of Border Patrol agents that are in Cochise County.
That's an amazing statement, Ed. That really is amazing. We need to know more about this man.
He's a good man, and the sheriff we had before him was a very good man. And the thing is, there is a real mission statement and purpose within his troops. They are serious about what they're doing. They're inspired, and they have a tremendous work ethic, and they get a lot done. And sad to say, but the federal people do not have that.
Absolutely. Well, Ed, I am so glad I called you last night, and we were able to get you on the air today. Thanks so much for coming on, and I'll let you get back to taking care of those six sick cows.
Well, next time I'm in D.C., you and I need to, I'll buy you a steak.
All right. That sounds great. Thank you so very much, Ed, for giving us a call. You have a blessed day, and keep the faith, and keep fighting the good fight.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you very much.
All righty. Bye-bye. All right. Well, there you go. You heard from three ranchers here, different perspectives. Plus, we heard from the representative from FAIR, from the legal aspects of it. But I hope that you got an idea about what all is going on at the border. And that is why anytime you can talk to the people that are on the border, that are living the life, this is where you get to know what's really going on. I certainly hope you enjoyed the show. If you want to give us a call, 229-7984, that's 229-7984. Thanks for tuning in with us. This is WCRS. We are going to let Schnitt have a few minutes to take it to the top of the hour. Bye-bye, everybody.